Cold mornings, frosty windows. Yep, it's that time of year. So treat yourself and start your day with a cup of fresh roasted Sterling Roastery coffee, sourced from around the world and roasted multiple times a week for unbeatable freshness. It's the kind of warm-up every sports fan deserves this holiday season. And right now, you can win one of three $50 Sterling gift cards, perfect for gifting or building your own winning lineup of Java in the morning. Enter today at sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways so you can wake up, warm up, and Sterling up this holiday season. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
125 defining moments, one legendary league. This is Darren Hayes of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, and a great book is out right now, NFL Moments, 125 Icons and Stories That Define the NFL. It's a definitive visual history of the National Football League, packed with iconic images and untold stories behind the game's biggest plays and its greatest players. From the early legends like Red Grange to today's stars like Patrick Mahomes, this book is a touchdown for fans who crave more than just stories. So give your football bookshelf a Hall of Fame upgrade or snag a holiday gift for that NFL history buff on your shopping list. Pick up NFL Moments, available now at your favorite bookseller. You know, besides looking at what the players are wearing, one great way to tell what era of football game you're watching is by the offensive formations and how the defensive formations react to it. Well, Timothy P. Brown of Football Archaeology takes us back into the 1950s to tell us about the formations of 1955. Tim's up in just a moment to tell us all about it.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pig Pen, your portal to positive football history. And welcome to another Tuesday where we get to talk with Timothy P. Brown of FootballArchaeology.com fame. And Tim, welcome back to the Pig Pen.
Darren, looking forward to chatting. I'm hoping that this podcast is highly informative.
I think it's going to be highly informative, and I think we ought to party like it's 1955. Was that a song by Prince? Wasn't it something like that?
Yeah. I'm not sure. Okay. Whatever. Okay. It wouldn't be the year I'd pick, but okay. You do you.
Well, you did pick this year because you wrote a story on it, and yeah, the story is titled Offensive Formations in 1955.
Yeah.
So can you tell us about this?
Well, so first of all, so when I published this story, it comes about because I recently bought a little publication called Everybody's Football. It was a giveaway, an advertising premium from the Massachusetts Mutual Life Insurance Company. And so I was just working off of that. And I remembered, you know, when I was paging through it, that it had seen it copyrighted in 1947, but I didn't pay attention to that. And then after I wrote the first two stories in this sequence, then I went back and I looked at, I said, I got to figure out who wrote this thing, because there really doesn't have a lot of author information, and who illustrated, because it's got all these really cool, I mean, if you're into commercial art and period commercial art, it's got some great imagery in it. And I think a lot of the people who are reading it for the visuals, you know, more than for what I have to say. But anyways.
So like the Playboy for the football fan is what you're saying.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, it's Playboy. It's, well, it might even be Penthouse. For the graphic artist among football fans. This one time in college. Anyways, let's not go there. Then, like the third story in the sequence, I basically went back and figured out who these people were who wrote the thing, and my point in giving that background is that it was originally published in 1947 and then republished in 55. And my sense is that they didn't make a lot of changes in the 1955 version. And I say that because, like, even what, you know, like the like the first two stories I wrote, I'm kind of saying, well, you know, this feels more like the 1940s stuff than the 1950s, even though that, you know, I titled it about 1955. And so sure enough, you know, this is published by a guy who was the line coach at Georgetown University, then a sports writer in Washington, and then the illustrator is a commercial artist who probably is most famous for creating the Notre Dame leprechaun. That's the surprise in story number three.
Oh, okay.
So anyway, but so this first one just says, okay, when they laid out the offenses that were used in 55, they basically identified the single wing, the Notre Dame box or shift, the double wing, then the modern tee, the split tee, and the wing tee. And so the reason I had said, well, you know, this feels more like 40s and 50s is because they kind of gave short thrift to the split tee and the wing tee, which by 1955 were a bigger deal than, you know, that you would have thought that they'd get more coverage. Anyways, but so the cool thing, just, I mean, just from a pure football standpoint and looking at those six offenses, is that, you know, you had the original, you know, the original traditional tee, where, you know, it's basically the same positioning as the modern tee, but the quarterback was offset from center and he got the snap and then he pitched it to, you know, or handed it off to one of his teammates. But the single wing, the Notre Dame box, and the double wing all were direct snap offenses. You know, so we went from the original offense where you're snapping to the quarterback who then had to pitch it, or at least hand it off or pitch it to somebody else. But then in 1912, the rules changed. So he didn't, or 1910, the rules changed. So he didn't have to do that anymore, right? We got rid of the checkerboard field and those associated rules. So now with the direct snap, you know, those three are all direct snap offenses. And basically, you're snapping the ball directly to your dominant back. You know, in the wing tee or in the single wing, it's, you know, Carlisle with Jim Thorpe, you know, at the tailback. Notre Dame is a little bit more mixed up because they, you know, they kind of balanced, you know, it's kind of it helped you complement, you know, your different players. But like the double wing, you know, that was like Ernie Nevers, you know, at Stanford, you know, getting the, you know, playing fullback in the double wing. You know, so you had these, you know, these, you got the ball right to your dominant player. And then the next three, you know, starting in 1940, then you get the T, you know, the Shaughnessy and Halas and, you know, those guys. And then in 41, you had Don Faurot at Missouri with the split T. And then you had, you know, the boys from Delaware. Now I'm blanking on his name, but anyways, you know, with the wing T. That was more like late 40s, early 50s. But there you're, you know, you got a quarterback under center, and you know, and the offenses start spreading out a bit. They become a little, you know, more passing oriented, passing friendly. You know, you got men in motion, you got wings, you know, you got split ends. You know, so it's just one of those things where it's just kind of it's interesting that, you know, this was a real transition point. You know, 47, they were still in transition from the direct snap offenses to the quarterback under center offenses. And then, but each of those had variations, right? You know, again, direct snapped, single wing, Notre Dame, and double wing. And then the quarterback under center, you got the modern tee, you got the split tee, and you've got the wing tee. You know, and then obviously there's been, you know, a million different variations since then. But it was just, it's kind of a cool period look at what the offensive formations were at just at a moment in time, right? You know, now today, but what's kind of cool now is just that we're, you know, in a lot of ways, we've gone back to the direct snap offenses, right? You know, kind of starting with the shotgun, and then we get to the read option, and, you know, whatever we're doing now with the read options and RPOs and whatnot, you know, but it's a much more passing oriented, you know, direct snap as opposed to a running oriented direct snap. So, you know, it's one of these, you know, history repeats itself or rhymes or whatever, right? But you know, it's just, it's interesting how, you know, how now we're so spread out, you know, horizontally on the football field. And it's there, you know, if you want to spread all the receivers out, there aren't many left to be in the backfield anymore. You know, they're out there wide.
Right.
And so then you direct snap it and you got, you know, either an empty backfield or you have one guy and, you know, but that's, you know, the old days are gone, other than when people do specialty, you know, trickeration, specialty plays, right? And those are fun, you know. Those are fun because they bring back something old and it surprises, you know, defenses that aren't built to defend them.
It makes you almost kind of wonder what, you know, innovators like Amos Alonzo Stagg and Pop Warner would think about if they see those empty backfields sets that we have now. You know, they're probably be, what the heck's going on here?
Yeah, you know, so, I mean, it's one of those things that, like, so, you know, college football for a long time had a rule that said everybody had to be within 15 yards of the center. So, like, some of the split ends that we have now, you couldn't do legally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they I don't even know when they put that in, but because, like, early on, like 1908, Idaho had, you know, a spread formation that was, they were all across the field. And so it wasn't like people, you know, there were here and there, there were people who imagined really different, you know, radical ways of spreading the field. But for the most part, everybody kind of maintained the, these five guys are the interior linemen. They're going to stay real close to one another. And yeah, sometimes we'll split the end like 3 yards or something like that. So it was more like people did things by, it was the norm. That was just kind of the nature of the game. And it wasn't because you had to do it that way. It would kind of be like, well, now they've instituted rules, but it'd be kind of like, you know, shifting the outfield in baseball. You know, for a long time, everybody just kept their people in, you know, same old spots or shifting a little bit. But they didn't do the radical shift. And then all of a sudden somebody said, well, why not? You know, so they started doing it. So there's things like that. It's the norm. You know, the pace of play is another good example of that. You know, do you, you know, the ball, somebody's down, boom, you get back, line up, boom, call the next play and go. So, you know, now, like our pace of play, I mean, we've got hurry up offenses, but, you know, they're not as hurry up as hurry up used to run them, you know, back at Michigan in early days of, you know, the, you know, 20th century. So, you know, it's just, I don't know. It's always interesting. Like, what do people do based on norms and tradition versus what they do, you know, versus based on the rules. So it's the culture versus rules kind of, you know, arguments.
Yeah. And it's nice and so refreshing that what you do in these tidbits of yours, that you're talking about the tradition of football, you're bringing those traditions of, you know, early football back to us and reminding of us of what this game was like and what these players were facing and the strategies. And it's also interesting. It's like you said, it's a totally different game than what we are used to watching in our lifetime. And that really makes it quite interesting to know the evolution. And, yeah, and you do this a lot in your tidbits. And maybe you could share with the listeners where they can take in some of these.
Sure. Go to footballarchaeology.com. It's a Substack site. So either subscribe, in which case you'll get an email every time I publish a story, or, you know, bookmark it, go there whenever you want. Or I'm also on Blue Sky. So, you know, if you want to follow me there, you know, have at it, because I publish it on Blue Sky every time as well. So kind of whatever floats your boat.
All right. Well, Tim, we really appreciate you coming on here and sharing with us today. Hope everybody enjoys the games this weekend that are up because we're in the football season, and I'll talk to you back about it next week.
Very good. Looking forward to it.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
You did not see their faces on the Wheaties boxes, nor did they have the headlines, but they were breaking barriers, one pitch at a time. The integration of minor league baseball, a history and player register, 1946 to 1959, by Rick Swain and Gary C. Fink, shines a light on the overlooked heroes who paved the way for future legends. From dusty bus rides to hostile crowds, these players fought for a place in a game that did not want to see them win. More than history, it's a tribute to courage, perseverance, and the power of a game to change. Honor their legacy today and grab a copy of The Integration of Minor League Baseball at your favorite bookseller.